How does it feel to be a U.S. business in China right now? Apparently, not as bad as you might think. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. So just to review where we're at in our back-and-forth trade dispute with China, on Friday, the U.S. imposed tariffs on $34 billion worth of Chinese goods. China did the same for U.S. goods. This week, President Trump threatened more tariffs, this time on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods. China threatened to retaliate further. Marketplace's Jennifer Pak joins us from Shanghai. Good morning, Jennifer.
Morning, Sabri.
How are U.S. businesses in China feeling about this escalation?
Well, the people I speak to say they're cautious, some are nervous, but that really hasn't dampened the enthusiasm for the China market. You see, some or more American firms are depending on China for revenue growth. The American Chamber of Commerce in Shanghai today released a survey and found that some 80% of its members who responded predict they will have more revenues next year, while some 61% still expect to expand investment in China. Now, that's not to say American firms don't have concerns. American firms are very worried about the lack of intellectual property protection, the trouble obtaining licenses, and domestic competition, including from state-owned enterprises. Now, there are concerns that with this U.S. tariffs escalation, that these issues might become worse.
Well, these are the exact same issues that the U.S. tariffs were supposed to address. So what is the state of U.S.-China negotiations on these issues?
Well, China's Ministry of Commerce says the two sides haven't been in contact to restart the negotiations because there is no trust. Remember, a few weeks ago, senior officials were holding talks in Washington and Beijing fairly regularly. At one point, they said, while the talks are ongoing, there will be no more tariffs. But then in mid-June, President Trump made a surprise announcement that tariffs were back on. That's not to say the doors have closed. President Trump never fails to flatter Chinese President Xi Jinping, calling him a great friend. And China's government has also been unilaterally opening up market access to financial services. But those efforts have been described by American firms as far too modest. The two countries' economies are so intertwined that it's not a question of whether the two sides have to sit down and talk. It's a question of when.
Marketplace China correspondent Jennifer Pak, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
And let's take a look at the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.8%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 5 to 7/10% range, with the Dow future up 161 points. The world's biggest oil producer next year will be us, the United States. At least that's how it's looking right now, according to a report out today from the Energy Information Administration. The U.S. would be producing more oil than Russia, more than Saudi Arabia. But what does that mean for U.S. consumers who are paying nearly $3 a gallon across the U.S.? Marketplace's Aaron Schrank reports.
Thanks to advancements like fracking, oil production in the U.S. has doubled in the past decade. Jason Bordoff runs Columbia University's Center on Global Energy Policy.
The dramatic increase has been one of the strongest positive forces in the U.S. economy, creating economic activity and jobs.
So good for Americans, Bordoff says, but being number one won't have much of an effect on what we'll pay at the pump.
Because the world uses about 100 million barrels a day. So if the U.S. goes from 10 to 11 million barrels a day, that's an increase, but it's still a pretty marginal factor.
Surging U.S. oil production has reduced dependence on other countries. In 2005, the U.S. imported 65% of its crude. Today, it's less than 17. Fred Lawrence at the Independent Petroleum Association of America.
That gives us a lot of clout, economic clout, but also diplomatic and political.
OPEC, with its 15 members, is still the heavyweight in the global oil market, producing about a third of the world's oil. I'm Aaron Schrank for Marketplace.
The chairman of Papa John's has resigned. John Schnatter used a racial slur on a conference call with a media agency and used descriptions of violence against minorities that people on the call found offensive. The 56-year-old founder of Papa John's stepped down as CEO 6 months ago after he blamed the NFL's national anthem dispute for falling pizza sales. The call in which Schnatter used the offensive language was supposed to be a practice run for not using offensive language.
James in Bridgewater, New Jersey, wrote to express his appreciation for the way that Marketplace presents business and economic news at the everyman and everywoman level and offers insights not provided by other news outlets. Now, if you agree with James, please join him as a Marketplace investor by donating online at marketplace.org. Thanks to James and everyone who makes our work possible.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
The World Health Organization has announced it's no longer categorizing transgender identity as a mental illness, which could pave the way for better health care for transgender patients. Costa Rica recently created a program to offer hormone replacement therapy for transgender people through its national universal health care system. Reporter Sarah Barrett has this report on how that's going.
Costa Rica is a small country, about 4.8 million people, and since the program started in the fall, only about 30 people have signed up. Carolina Vandoquidos, a transgender woman, is one of them. She says in the past, it was too expensive to pay privately for an endocrinologist at around $100 just for an appointment. So she found other ways to get hormones.
Before, I used to self-medicate with birth control pills, but now I'm taking testosterone blockers. They've been helping me a lot.
Quiros not only gets hormone therapy, the program also covers doctor visits and psychological counseling. It doesn't offer gender transition surgery like a similar program in Uruguay, but it does provide more treatment options than richer countries like Canada and Germany. In Costa Rica, transgender people have to go through a process before they're approved for hormone treatment. First, there are physical exams to make sure they're healthy. Dr. Gloria Terwes works for the Department of Social Development. She helped write the government policy.
As a public institution, we have to make sure that the treatment will have more benefits than risks.
Right now, the program's only available to people 18 years or older. And once they're approved, the treatment is free. The government says the program might actually avoid future costs by keeping people out of the black market, where they can fall victim to dirty needles or bad treatments.
No tienes por qué pasar por un psiquiatra.
Low cost, high benefits, we're very confident.
Quiros says she's glad she's not taking birth control pills anymore. But she says the government process has felt stigmatizing at times, like when a doctor had to sign off on her eligibility.
You shouldn't have to have a psychiatrist decide whether you actually are or are not transgender.
Costa Rican officials expect as many as 600 people will seek treatment through the program. And they're considering eventually expanding the program to cover transition surgery as well. In Costa Rica, I'm Sarah Barrett from Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.